Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Friday, July the 10th, it's a big weekend of sport coming up. We'll have more on that later in today's episode. But first, former Kent MP Anne Widdecombe has died at the age of 78. She was the Conservative representative for Maidstone for 23 years and famously appeared on Strictly in 2010. In recent years, she became an advisor for Reform UK. Well, Anne was on the Kent Politics podcast last summer and spoke to local Democracy reporter Simon Finley.
Did you enjoy your time as an MP for Kent?
Oh, yes, I did. I mean, I'm very glad I chose to spend my life that way. I wouldn't have done anything else. And I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the individual casework. I enjoyed the broader constituency work, for example, the Channel Tunnel rail link. It was always a very great pleasure to solve things on people's behalves. I mean, I think probably one of the moments that really stands out for me as an MP is not in any front bench capacity, although I was on the front bench at the time, but acting purely as a constituency MP. I managed to get one of my constituents out of jail in Morocco. And the reaction of his wife when I phoned her up and said, "John's out, he's with the ambassador, he'll be home in 48 hours, told me why it was that I'd become an MP.
You stood down from the House of Commons, must be 15 years ago, and you've been on quite a journey, you know, embracing many new things that people probably wouldn't have expected you to do, such as Strictly and starring in Panto and so on. Was that a conscious decision on your part after politics?
No, it just sort of happened. I did intend to retire, and I underlined that three times, retire. That's what I intended to do. And I agreed to do Strictly Come Dancing, which I had turned down every year on the trot before that because I was still an MP and I didn't think it right to do it then. But as soon as I was no longer an MP, I said, yes, OK, I'll do it. I honestly expected to be out within the first couple of weeks. Yeah. I really did. Wasn't expecting to be there in week 10, which I was. And that just led on to things which I couldn't possibly have ever planned. Mm-hmm. It led on to doing the live tour, to doing pantomimes, as you rightly said. Also to being on even at the Royal Opera House in a Donizetti opera. It just led on to things that I was not expecting. And I think it might have gone on doing that until, as I say, in 2019, I just became too frustrated with the then political situation.
Do you like to challenge people's perceptions of you?
Not really. And to a certain extent, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, if people have made up their mind about you, probably nothing you can say or do is going to change it. So, yeah. You know, I just carry on.
Here you are, 77 years old. I'm sure you don't mind me mentioning your age.
Not at all.
Where most folks would be tending their West Country gardens, what keeps you going? What's the driver behind you?
Well, I think what kept me going through Brexit and through reform has been, I suppose, the way I put it at the time that I joined the Brexit Party was duty wasn't just calling, duty was positively howling. And I just feel I want to help get reform on its feet. And it's obviously doing that without much help from me. And I want to help in that effort. But then I really do intend to retire. Again, underlined three times, maybe with as little hope as before.
Kent County Council leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron has said Ms. Widdecombe will be very much missed. She's posted a video message on socials.
I was lucky enough to meet Anne Widdecombe last September. I was her warm-up act at a Reform UK meeting in Somerset. And she blew me away with her directness, her wit, her brilliant stories, but most of all with her kindness and advice. I always looked up to Anne. She was the original suck-it-up politician. She had no time for waffle or blather. And she had a superpower that's really inspired me. She literally didn't give a damn what you thought of her personally. She didn't care. She was there to get an important job done, and that was that. She'd tell it to you straight, even if it upset or offended you, and that is a quality sorely lacking in politics today. And I think we need more of it. So, God rest you, Anne. Thank you for your service, your inspiration, your patriotism, and your ability to tell it how it is. Sleep well, dear lady. and thank you for everything.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a man's been arrested on suspicion of dangerous driving after a woman in her 40s was hit by a lorry in Dover. She was flown to a London hospital and remains in a life-threatening condition following the collision on the A20 in the early hours of yesterday. A 41-year-old is in custody. Armed police have been called to a property in Raynham following reports of a man with a possible weapon. Hempstead Road had to be closed yesterday afternoon, and officers were still at the scene late last night. You can see pictures within today's story on the website. Police are hunting a man who followed a woman and took pictures and videos of her in Medway. The victim noticed him acting suspiciously on Ratcliffe Highway in Hoo on Sunday. We've shared a picture of someone officers want to speak to via our socials. Meantime, police have uncovered a suspected cannabis farm at a property on Chatham High Street. They seized a number of plants following reports of suspicious activity on Wednesday. We're told the site's been secured and investigations are continuing. Now, next on today's episode, a report out today has raised concerns about 27-hour waiting times for A&E patients at a Kent hospital. Inspectors visited the William Harvey in Ashford in February and found unacceptable overcrowding. Urgent and emergency care has been rated as requires improvement. Well, Lucy's been chatting to Amanda Williams from the Care Quality Commission.
We'd had some concerns about patient flow, about corridor care and waiting times, and wanted to assess whether the service was safe and meeting patients' needs. I think it's fair to say that overall we found a department under huge pressure, but staff were really committed and working incredibly hard. We had been in previously, and from that previous inspection, this time we saw real improvements, particularly in the leadership of the department at the William Harvey. There was real improvements in teamwork, and that, as a result, improvements in clinical care. We did find that some of the serious concerns that we'd had hadn't gone away, especially in relation to corridor care and long waits, patient flow, and some issues around medicines management. So there were still some shortfalls in the standards that patients should expect, but there had been quite a marked improvement on their service delivery since our previous inspection, and that's something that they should be really quite proud of, though, as I say, there were still some shortfalls.
And the report mentioned that a critical incident was actually declared on the second day of your visit, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that was really because of the sheer volume of patients coming through the department. And when they when an organisation calls a critical incident, it means that they can call on help from around the system. And the flow through an emergency department is very much a system issue. And so that's something that we do see happening across up and down the country in emergency departments, where the number of people presenting just exceeds the capacity.
Can you talk me through some of those waiting times then? What kind of times are we looking at for people who are coming into A&E?
We saw some really quite long waiting times. Some patients waiting in the department in excess of 24 hours. That said, they were receiving medical and nursing care during that time, but to remain in the department for that length of time is not ideal and not acceptable, really.
And Amanda, could you talk me through a little bit about the issues around patient confidentiality as well?
Yeah, the issues relating to patient confidentiality are issues related to overcrowding within the department. It's very hard to have confidential conversations with people when they're having to have their care delivered in the corridor. So we did hear conversations occurring and see some elements of care being delivered in corridor areas, which means that the person's privacy and dignity is being compromised.
Yeah, that dignity is something I wanted to bring up as well, because, you know, it must be difficult for patients if they are sort of stuck in a corridor for hours on end. And what's the kind of recommendations that have been given to sort of tackle these issues? What can be done at the hospital?
The hospital are working with their partners and need to continue to work with their partners, and they're around relieving the flow issues into and out of the hospital to allow patients to move through the department in a timely way. They are very aware of that. We've raised those issues with them and have asked the trust to provide us with assurance that they're undertaking actions to address that.
Dr. Des Holden, who's the acting chief executive for the Hospital Trust, has admitted the findings were an accurate reflection of the overcrowding. His statement goes on to say that this year we have been working as a whole hospital team alongside NHS England and with our partner organisations to end corridor care in our hospitals. Thanks to the hard work of many staff, we now rarely care for a patient in a corridor, and we're now focusing our work on eliminating all waste for patients outside a cubicle or bed space anywhere in the hospital.
Kent Online reports.
A housing developer has been told off for ringing up councillors in Medway on the day of planning meetings. Several reported being contacted by Bellway Homes Limited ahead of making a decision on proposals for 150 homes in Raynham. The company says it was to make sure they'd received a leaflet, but the chief planning officers told them not to do it again. There are concerns some small schools in Kent could be forced to close because of a drop in the birth rate. An education consultant fears fewer children entering the education system may make some primaries unviable as they're currently funded per pupil. Council papers suggest the number of primary school children will reduce by almost 1,500 between now and 2029. Next, and it's going to be a huge weekend for football fans in Kent as England play for a place in the semi-finals of the World Cup. The Three Lions take on Norway in the quarter-finals tomorrow night. It's a 10 p.m. kick-off, so pubs across the county are expected to be busy. Lucy's been chatting to Superintendent Nick Sparks from Kent Police.
In the run-up to the operation, our licensing officers have been engaging with licensees and the community. We've also had time to plan sufficient resources in to make sure that we've got adequate officers on duty to keep everyone safe in the nighttime economy during the match on Saturday.
And how do you go about planning that? Were you sort of, as soon as England got through, were you sort of straight away thinking about shift patterns and stuff?
So we'd already worked out when the matches were going to be, and we'd managed to put on sufficient resource for most of the matches. And then once we were able to map England's progress through the tournament, we can then add and refine that plan to make sure we get it exactly right for Saturday night.
What are some of the main challenges when it comes to policing during a big sporting event like this?
I think it's the environmentals. You have to think about the weather, what time of day it is. We've had that this tournament as well. Changes to overseas matches where sometimes the time might change slightly. And obviously the success of people's teams. You know, if they don't do well, people are unhappy. And if they do well, they want to celebrate. So it's all quite a dynamic that you have to police together and work with partners to make sure we get that right.
Has there been any sort of trouble so far? Have there been any incidents relating to the World Cup, you know, at pubs or anything? I know we had the game on was it Saturday, where it was Sunday, that was open till 5 a.m. Did that cause any issues?
Well, because of the planning and the engagement we'd already done with the licensees and the business community, we were in a really good position. And we have had relatively few incidents with people who might have had a little bit too much to drink. On the whole, it's been a relatively peaceful, well-enjoyed, fun event for the community.
What would your advice be to anyone who's going out to the pub to watch this Saturday, just to make sure they stay safe?
So for me, I want people to go out and enjoy themselves. I want them to go out and have a good time. Make sure that you stay well hydrated. Make sure that you manage your drinking properly, and also plan the morning after. We don't want people drink driving, so think about how you're going to get home. Think about that next day, making sure you're sensible and have a rest and lots of hydration.
So will the biggest police presence on Saturday, are you expecting that to be sort of more in towns and cities, you know, places like that?
So we're lucky. We've got a diverse licensing community. We've got the big town centres. Some of those have got big screens. We've got large ticketed venues, but we've also got all the rural pubs as well, places that are enjoying and sort of, you know, making sure that people can watch the match. So we've got patrols in all of those areas. We are focusing on those big screen areas to make sure that people are safe, people can have a good time, and that we're ensuring that those events pass without incident.
What's the kind of best and worst scenario in terms of whether England win or lose? Does that kind of have an impact on how much trouble breaks out at all?
it's unpredictable. And generally, you know, people will celebrate if England are happy, but then you occasionally get some of the hijinks. And people are disappointed if we don't go through, which is understandable. And we're there to make sure that they can sort of participate in the event and then go home safely. And we'll be encouraging people to do that. And that's all that sometimes needs, is just that friendly sort of, I think it's time to go home now. Thank you.
I suppose we saw with Jordan Henderson, didn't we, that you can actually get yourself injured by celebrating as well. You've got to be careful.
Well, that does happen. We'd like people to enjoy the event, stay safe. Some of that is just about drinking sensibly. Some of it's about looking out for each other, making sure your friends look after you. And we're working with partners such as Kent Fire and Rescue and South Coast Ambulance Service to make sure everyone's safe out there in the nighttime economy.
Kent Online reports.
A campaign to save an historic First World War ship moored at Chatham Docks has ended in failure. HMS President 1918 has been described as a national maritime treasure. It's due to be dismantled later this month, though, as the site's owners are moving out. A Kent dad's calling for more awareness of dangers on the coast after getting trapped in mud. He'd been digging for bait with his 11-year-old son when he became stranded at St Mary's Bay on Romney Marsh earlier this year. Oliver managed to help his dad stay calm and eventually get to safety. He's been praised for his bravery by the Coast Guard. Nowhere in Kent has made it onto the shortlist for the UK Town of Culture competition. You might remember that 15 local areas put in a bid, including Dartford, Dover, Chatham and Tunbridge Wells. They're no longer in the running after being beaten by towns including Great Yarmouth, Grimsby and Basildon. And a Kent tourist attraction has been chosen as part of a campaign by English Heritage to bring back postcards. They've gathered 800 historical prints of Dover Castle dating back to 1906. And illustrators Nick Sharrett and Sir Quentin Blake have also designed three limited edition ones that can be collected at 18 historical sites across the country. Grace Parsonage from English Heritage has been explaining more to Ruby Ellen.
I think what English Heritage are really keen to do, and what I think the research has suggested as well, is that there's been such a recent decline in people sending postcards. It used to be a real established institution, and English Heritage are really keen to try and keep some of the traditions alive and revive some of the practices of sending postcards.
So why did you specifically choose Dover as your historical postcards?
So actually, the collection of postcards that we have at Dover Castle were a reasonably recent acquisition, but they weren't collected primarily because of the decline. It was just a nice little thing to highlight Dover Castle.
Why did you pick such famous illustrators such as Nick and Sir Quentin Blake?
So yeah, we've got three limited edition postcards. They've been designed by Nick Sharrett and Sir Quentin Blake, and they're lovely designs and really help illustrate why history is important. They have lovely little castles on them and people can collect those for free.
So what's your kind of aim with this campaign? Like, what do you want to get out of it and encourage people to do?
I think the aim of the campaign is just to really highlight the importance of postcards. There has been a real decline in people using them. 52% of people say that they never send postcards, which is the majority of people, which is such a shame for this really famous tradition that we have. Of course, it's a lot easier for people to send a text, send a direct message, whatever platform they want. So it would be really nice to help bring back some of those traditions.
Lovely. So my final question is, how can people get involved in this?
So we've got lots of events coming up from the 18th of July for a few of our key sites, including Dover Castle and Woolmer Castle. There's opportunities to get involved with fairground activities. At Dover Castle, we're also going to be having a little drop-in event so people can come and see some of the postcards. People can have a look at seeing if they can transcribe and seeing some of the difficulties that we've come across as we've been transcribing them. So that'll be at Dover Castle on the 18th of July as well.
Kent Online Sports.
We're starting off with football, and England player Mark Gahey is a major doubt for their World Cup quarter-final with Norway tomorrow. The defender, who went to school in Gravesend, is thought to have picked up a hamstring injury during their win over Mexico. Midfielder that Declan Rice has also been isolated with a stomach bug. On to cricket now, and England's women are due to begin their first ever test match at Lord's today. They're taking on India just days after losing to Australia in the T20 World Cup final. Significantly, it'll be a last appearance for Dover-born batter Tammy Beaumont, who's retiring after a 17-year international career. Staying with cricket, and Kent are back in Canterbury for their latest game in the T20 Blast. The Spitfires are taking on Surrey. They'll be looking to bounce back following back-to-back defeats in the competition. A play with that one was due to start at 6:30. And Kent's women are in action in their first T20 Blast League 2 finals day this weekend. They're playing Gloucestershire in the semi-final at Cardiff on Sunday after qualifying second in their group. The winner will face group winners Glamorgan. Head coach James Hockley has been chatting to our sports editor Matthew Panting.
I mean, testament to the girls. I mean, we put ourselves in a position where we needed to win four in a row to give ourselves a chance to get to finals day, and they played some fantastic cricket over the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks. And yeah, today was a bit of a nerve-wracking day, knowing that Gloucester needs to have a big win, big bonus point winner, and a swing of the net run rate to get above us, and then Middlesex obviously needed a bonus point win against Sussex as well. So results went in our favour, and we've managed to get to finals though, which is brilliant. T20 is so minute, the fractions and decisions that people make in T20 games are so fractional. So for us to get over the line against Northants game was huge. I mean, we got very nervous, obviously, batting in our second innings, trying to chase just 100. But I think the game they played against Derby on Friday night was really good. They showed a bit of character to come out and play with a bit more freedom, a bit more intensity, and yeah, get over the line. I think last year was a real learning curve for all of us, not just coaching staff, players. I think everyone in the club was trying to find their feet in Tier 2. We had a really good winter. We recruited really, really well, got some really good players, and got some good youngsters coming through, giving them a bit of a scaffolding around where we wanted to, how we wanted to play. And the girls have executed. They've worked really hard, and I'm absolutely thrilled for them because they've put so much work in to get to this point. Now they've got rewarded with a good finals day.
Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker. Plus, you can head to the What's On pages for details of everything going on in the county over the next couple of days. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.